Hi, welcome to the podcast, The Socially Inspired Investor, where you can expand your knowledge of rewarding investment strategies and address environmentally and socially responsible investing alternatives with important insights from experts in the field. I'm Pat O'Neill, your host for these podcast episodes, which feature ESG, environmental, social, and governance stories in focus, and deep dive discussions with notable experts. This time, the topic, investing in the post-pandemic era, also featured in companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest at sociallyinspiredinvestor.com. In the spotlight today, two very distinguished individuals in the field, Esther Pan Sloan of the United Nations Capital Development Fund and Ethan Powell, founder of Impact Shares and Chief Investment Officer and Principal at Brookmont Capital Management in Dallas. The coronavirus experience has certainly changed our lives on a personal level and, for many of us, how we think about the world. It's a pandemic that knows no boundaries or nationalities. Everyone worldwide has had to go through it. More people are wondering how we can help make the world healthier and a better place, and possibly how it can affect our investment strategies. How has COVID-19 impacted our investments? What will happen now? And can our investments somehow play a role in benefiting the world in the future? We have two special guests today to talk about that. Esther Pan Sloan, head of Partnerships, Policy, and Communications at the United Nations Capital Development Fund, or UNCDF, and Ethan Powell, founder of Impact Shares and Chief Investment Officer and Principal at Brookmont Capital Management in Dallas. Thanks both of you so much for being here today. And Esther, I'd like to start with you. Can you explain briefly what the UNCDF is and what it's designed to do?
Sure. So the United Nations Capital Development Fund is a UN aid agency that was founded in 1966 to fight poverty using finance. It focuses on the 47 poorest countries in the world, which are known as the least developed countries. And we work mainly in three areas. The first is financial inclusion, which is about bringing individuals into the market by giving them access to savings or credit. So, for example, in many African countries, we work to build savings groups of rural women where they each save a small amount of money and they put it in a box with a lock on it. And every week they come back, pool their money, count it, and make loans to each other. And once they've done that for a year, we connect them through digital financial services to a bank. And for these women who've never had assets before, suddenly they have a savings pot, they have credit, and they have a different stature in their community because they control assets. So that's one of the examples of what we would do in financial inclusion. In that area, we also support private sector companies to create goods and services for the poor to make sure that people at the bottom of the pyramid have access to financial services. For example, we've worked in 8 African countries with banks to create digital wallets for poor youth to save money in very small amounts. And most of these banks did not think that was a viable profit-making scheme until they saw that in these 8 countries, the young people saved $20 million. So that's an example of how we show that there's a market for serving the poor. Our second main area of work is local development finance, which is about helping local government officials manage their public finances effectively, collect taxes, and deliver services to their citizens. So in this area, we would do something like co-finance a bus station in a town in Tanzania that's on the border with Uganda and many other countries and has a bus station that sends buses all around Africa. So before we helped build this project, there was kind of a muddy field, and when it rained, people would miss their buses and buses would get stuck. After the project was finished, there's a very nice paved area where the buses can pull in. People can find their buses in an orderly way. The surrounding communities are selling snacks and fruits and candy to the bus riders, so they're making income, and the locality is collecting more taxes off the business opportunity around the bus station. The last area that we work in is innovative financial instruments. So we make loans and guarantees to small businesses in least developed countries to help them grow and prosper. And a quick example of that is Aptek. It's a solar panel company in Uganda started by 2 brothers. They were looking for a loan of about $800,000, but they weren't able to get one from any bank in Uganda. We came in and made a senior unsecured loan to them for $200,000. And because we had come in with the first finance, they were able to get the additional finance from a commercial bank in Uganda. So that's how we try to unlock capital for small businesses in poor countries.
Okay. So I guess, Ethan, that's where you come in with the Impact Shares Sustainable Development Goals Global Equity ETF, or SDGA.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. So Impact Shares is a 501c3 SEC registered investment advisor. We receive funding from the Rockefeller Foundation's Innovative Finance Group, and we work with leading social advocacy groups like the UNCDF and ESTR to build investment strategies within the ESG sector that are designed specifically to address social and environmental issues that are aligned with that specific social advocacy group. So in this situation, we provide all of the net advisory proceeds instead of going to a large asset manager, goes back to the UNCDF to create engagement with global corporations to help them improve their score relative to the screens, goals, and aspirations of the UNCDF. So it's really a platform for engagement where we're bringing sector experts in social and environmental advocacy to help corporate America with the trajectory of their corporate citizenship.
Okay, great. I think there are probably still some people who are a little unclear about what an ETF is, an exchange-traded fund. Can you explain very briefly then what that is? It's similar to a mutual fund, I know, but what are the differences?
Yeah, the primary difference is that it's traded on the exchange, right? Whereas in a mutual fund, you have to go through an advisor or a broker-dealer that has a functioning selling agreement with the mutual fund sponsor. For exchange-traded funds, it trades on the exchange just like a individual equity would, but instead of getting exposure to that individual equity, you're getting exposure to a basket of equities or a portfolio of equities. And in this case, it's been constructed to mirror the broader global equity market. So by buying a single ticker, you can get exposure to a portfolio that has a thoughtful construction that Morningstar assists with and is constructed to invest in those companies that are doing the most to assist 27 least developed countries while also earning a market rate of return.
So it is pretty easy then, say, for a typical investor to get involved. Is there a minimum investment?
Well, they trade on the exchange in $20 per share increments. So no, they're very efficient trading vehicles and generally lower cost than a traditional mutual fund.
You think that the COVID-19 experience has been influencing your investment decisions?
Well, I think it's important to point out that this fund is what's called passively managed. So we work with our social advocacy groups and update the social screens annually. So the goal is to continue to push global corporations relative to the goals and aspirations of the UNCDF and then reflect changes in corporate behavior year over year. So this isn't impacting the underlying holdings per se, but certainly may inform our social screens once we roll them out towards the end of this year.
Esther, back to you for a second. How do you get the point across to individual investors, you think, from your standpoint, that it makes sense and it's worth it to include these type of investment vehicles in their overall strategy?
Well, I think the question is really, many investors are facing the question, how do I participate? How do I support the issues that I care about? How do I work to make a better world? And what tools are at my disposal? So I think many institutional investors certainly are hearing pressure from their shareholders and their participants about how their money is invested. So the nurses union in Sweden, for example, mandated that the investments made by that union had to support gender equality. And many pension funds are hearing that around the world. So institutional investors are certainly hearing it. People who support family offices are hearing it from the next generation of wealthy individuals who are very committed to social causes, not only through philanthropy to support the causes they care about, but they're looking now at the corpus of their funds and saying, what can I do with my investments that also reflects my values? You're seeing foundations move in this direction as well with PRI investments and looking at how do they invest their endowments. So I think if you're an individual investor and you care about issues like gun control or minority empowerment or women's economic empowerment, this is a new way that you as an individual can make decisions with your investment funds that reflect your values. So we know, for example, that it's hard for many people to feel like they're engaged with the UN. We're working in many countries around the world. You may not have a direct connection to a woman microfinance entrepreneur in Myanmar, but you could buy the SDGA fund on the stock market get a market return for your money and know that that fund is supporting our work, UNCDF's work, directly in the poorest countries. So it was a way for us to try to pilot a vehicle that would allow people to connect their investment funds, get a return, because we know that's important for investors and it's a fiduciary duty of many of fund managers, but also support social organizations that are working to make the world better.
So it seems there is a fair amount of pressure from investors that they want this kind of investment. It's more in demand, and the institutions are responding to that.
Yes, although we wish they would respond a little faster.
A part of your job must be so much raising money, talking to the big people who have the money, and convincing them.
It is a big part of it. And actually, the main focus of my fundraising, because the UNCDF is a UN agency, is actually with governments. So we are funded by donations, by grants from governments. And so we have a responsibility to use that tax money effectively. So what we are trying to do with these new vehicles, like this one with Impact Shares, is to pilot new instruments that can use taxpayer dollars that we are receiving to catalyze or attract private sector dollars to areas where they otherwise would not go and achieve a sustainable development outcome. For example, our biggest donor at UNCDF is Sweden, and Sweden has been very creative in its use of grant funding, where they will allow us to use their grant money to make loans to small businesses. We're doing that at concessional rates that help the small businesses survive. But then when the businesses pay their loans back, which they do, we're allowed to keep the income to make new loans. So it's essentially a very smart way to do philanthropy, because you're creating a self-regenerating source of finance.
That's terrific. Ethan, people don't necessarily associate big companies with having a social conscience, but the portfolio does seem to have a fair number of big companies. Many of them have been around for a long while. Maybe some of those companies we don't ordinarily think of as being socially responsible.
Yeah, and our perspective is that private sector, public sector, nonprofit sector, it's all ways of organizing people, and some ways are better for certain financial and social outcomes than others. One of the things that we look for are those companies that are not only committed to the sustainable development goals, but report on their level of commitment and are also engaged in developing countries. So almost by necessity, you're backing into large multinationals. And frankly, companies are a reflection of their people. And people are complex, and they're good at some things and they're bad at others. But one of the things that we really pride ourselves on is bringing organizations like the UNCDF to the table to help us accomplish actively managed social outcomes, right? We talk about how these are passively managed funds. They're passive from the standpoint of how it's designed to achieve a financial outcome. But the social outcome, it's really about engagement and engagement with people that are passionate about the issues and can help global corporations really steer their corporate citizenship in specific directions, like empowering people of color or women's empowerment, or in this case, sustainable development goals in the 47 least developed countries. So it's bringing the right people to the right tables at the right time to have the conversations that really advance our society.
And you do have a couple of other ETFs at Impact Shares as well, right, that are also on that same track, but they have a different focus.
That's right. We have a YWCA Women's Empowerment Fund. And then most importantly, given the backdrop that we have right now, is our NAACP Minority Empowerment Fund. And that's actually the only of the 600 ESG funds in the United States. It's the only one specifically addressing issues impacting people of color in corporate America.
Now, this goes back a little bit to what Esther was saying earlier, but with all this focus on sustainability, Ethan, how can SDGA actually make money for investors? I would think that a lot of them are very skeptical.
Yeah, well, I mean, the sort of proof is in the pudding, and the fund has a relatively above average equity market rate of return, I'll say that. And year to date, all three of the funds I just mentioned are in the top decile within their respective categories, which means they've beaten roughly 1,500 other funds, including actively managed funds. I think the key to remember is people really want to leverage all of their resources, be that consumption behavior, charitable giving, or in this case, their portfolio, to align their capital with their system of social beliefs. And for far too long, we, as Wall Street, have not provided them with many options, or certainly not enough precision so that it resonates with the individual investor. And frankly, Wall Street has both a credibility and a communication problem as it relates to offering ESG products, one of which is, who is a Wall Street firm to tell me what a good corporate citizen is or is not? And the second of which is, what does that mean to that firm, right? You really have to reconcile your system of social priorities in order to appropriately align your capital with your system of social beliefs, and that's really hard to do. However, knowing the background of the UNCDF, knowing what their organizational mission is, or the NAACP, or any of our social advocacy partners, you alleviate a lot of certainly the credibility problem as the UN actually developed the Sustainable Development Goals, and the communication problem as everyone's pretty familiar with the organizational mission of the NAACP. So we've been able to achieve market rate of return while achieving actively managed social outcomes. And I would even argue that over a full market cycle, the companies that we're invested in these funds, very well might outperform because they are more in tune with their clients, their suppliers, their employees. They're, in this case, actively engaged in developing economies. So we strongly believe that we'll see what history writes for these, but we do believe that they're in a position to perform as well or better than the market.
Esther, with the, I guess, rise in interest in socially responsible investing in recent years, do you think that the COVID-19 experience will actually speed up that trend a bit and might make this type of investing more popular among all kinds of investors?
I hope so. And that's been a topic of discussion at the UN and in a lot of multilateral forums lately, which is the clear evidence that societies that had stronger social safety systems have responded better to the COVID crisis, right? If you had a strong health network and your people had good access to healthcare, if you had a strong social safety net, businesses were not overleveraged and they had, you know, good access to reliable sources of finance, they were able to withstand the shocks better. So even in this first stage where governments are really focusing on the response to the health crisis and trying to mitigate the health impacts, it's very clear that the economic impacts that have come along with things like social distancing and shutdowns are hitting poorer and less equal communities harder. And that will be doubly true of poor countries. I heard this morning there are 150,000 confirmed cases of COVID in all of Africa, but that's not because that's how many cases there are. It's because that's their capacity to test. So once it becomes evident that, you know, this disease has really hit, you're in societies where there's not reliable access to clean water, the food supply is disrupted, 80% of the economy works in the informal sector, there are weak social safety nets. So imagine the health and economic pain we're going through in the United States or a developing country, and then magnify it by 1,000 for a poor country. So I think many investors and policymakers are realizing that the impacts of a crisis like this really show the effects of the policy choices we've made in the past. So as societies, we've chosen to invest in certain aspects of our infrastructure or business cycles or access to public services at the expense of others. And now we're really seeing the impacts of that in some very negative ways. So I think it will accelerate the move towards sustainable development investing or investments that are aligned with ESG principles, because A, it's a terrific opportunity to build a better society. So this idea of building back better, that all of this fiscal stimulus that's being released now to deal with COVID could go into clean energy investments or water investments or technology of the future that will really help us get on the right pathway to achieving both the Sustainable Development Goals and the Paris Agreement. And also because it just highlights that the choices we've made in the past have really negative impacts.
Ethan, do you think the COVID-19 experience, well, along the same lines, do you think it'll pick up the trend? But also, could there be more specific investments, more ETFs that focus on, say, health issues, potential pandemics, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. I think it's going to pick up the trend in part because what you see right now as it relates to both the COVID and the race issues that we're dealing here in the U.S., you see the private sector really taking a leadership position in a lot of ways and potentially filling in for other sectors that may not necessarily have as strong a voice on these topics. And, you know, I think that's really hopeful. So I think that more traditional investment houses will have to start to speak to their people, process, and philosophy as it relates to not only risk return, but also social implication of their capital allocation. applications. And hopefully in 5 to 10 years, there is no longer an ESG category. It's really just investing, and it's ingrained in everything that we do.
Well, that's excellent.
If you have any questions about our Impact Shares funds, tickers SBGA, NACP, or WOMN, please don't hesitate to visit our website at impactetfs.org.
Okay, great. And I was going to ask you the same thing, Esther. If you could give us just the specifics of where people can find out more information about you and on UNCDF.
Sure, absolutely. Our website is www.uncdf.org. We're doing quite a few specific COVID-related interventions, so you can find out about that there. There's a special tab on our webpage. And I think I'd just like people to keep in mind that one of the things we're doing as a UN agency is trying to convince investors that investing in emerging markets and poor countries is not always as risky as they think it is. So there are opportunities there to achieve sustainable development outcomes and make money. And so if they're interested in those types of opportunities, they should definitely reach out to us and Impact Shares and join us on this journey.
Great. Well, we'll leave it there then. Our guest today, Esther Pan Sloan, Head of Partnerships, Policy and Communications at the United Nations Capital Development Fund, or UNCDF, and Ethan Powell, founder of Impact Shares, and Chief Investment Officer and Principal at Berkman Capital Management in Dallas. I can't read all the credentials that you guys have because we would have used up the whole podcast. But it's great having you here today, and thanks so much for passing on your information and knowledge.
Thank you, Pat.
Okay, bye-bye. This podcast is copyrighted by Seasons of Advice Wealth Management. It is published and provided for informational and entertainment purposes only, and not for individualized investment advice. Please go to our website, soawealth.com, for additional information. We'll be back next time with more ESG stories in focus, another deep dive discussion and companion, socially inspired Investor Digest articles, and the spotlight feature on people and developments in the industry. Our podcast mission is to make socially inspired and ESG investing more consumer-friendly and achievable. This is the Socially Inspired Investor.